bowls of plastic tangerines and oranges, crepe paper flowers, plastic vases, porcelain vases filled with sand and incense sticks. A clock sat on a white runner crocheted with red phoenixes and red words about how lucky and bright life is. Moon Orchid lifted the ruffles to look inside the pigeonholes. There were also pen trays and little drawers, enough so that the children could each have one or two for their very own. The fish tank took up half the desk space, and there was still room for writing. The roll top was gone. The children had broken it slat by slat when they hid inside the desk, pulling the top over themselves. The Niho had boxes of toys that the married children's children played with now. Brave Orchid's husband had padlocked one large bottom cabinet and one drawer. "Why do you keep it locked?" Moon Orchid asked. "What's in there?" "Nothing," he said. "Nothing." "If you want to poke around," said Brave Orchid, "why don't you find out what's in the kitchen drawer so you can help me cook?" They cooked enough food to cover the dining room and kitchen tables. "Eat," Brave Orchid ordered. "Eat!" She would not allow anybody to talk while eating. In some families, the children worked out a sign language, but here the children spoke English, which their parents didn't seem to hear. After they ate and cleaned up, Brave Orchid said, "Now, we have to get down to business."
"What do you mean?"
said her sister. She and her daughter held one another's hands.
"Oh no, I don't want to listen to this," said Brave Orchid's husband and left to read in bed.
The three women sat in the enormous kitchen with the butcher's block and two refrigerators. Brave Orchid had an inside stove in the kitchen and a stove outside on the back porch. All day long, the outside stove cooked peelings and gristle into chicken feed. It horrified the children when they caught her throwing scraps of chicken into the chicken feed. Both stoves had been turned off for the night now, and the air was cooling.
"Wait until morning, Aunt," said Moon Orchid's daughter. "Let her get some sleep."
"Yes, I do need rest after traveling all the way from China," she said. "I'm here. You've done it and brought me here."
Moon Orchid meant that they should be satisfied with what they had already accomplished. Indeed, she stretched happily and appeared quite satisfied to be sitting in that kitchen at that moment.
"I want to go to sleep early because of jet lag," she said.
But Brave Orchid, who had never been on an airplane, did not let her.
"What are we going to do about your husband?" Brave Orchid asked quickly. "That ought to wake her up."
"I don't know. Do we have to do something?"
"He does not know you're here."
Moon Orchid did not say anything. For 30 years she had been receiving money from him from America, but she had never told him that she wanted to come to the United States. She waited for him to suggest it, but he never did. Nor did she tell him that her sister had been working for years to transport her here. First, Brave Orchid had found a Chinese-American husband for her daughter. Then the daughter had come and had been able to sign the papers to bring Moon Orchid over.
"We have to tell him you've arrived," said Brave Orchid.
Moon Orchid's eyes got big like a child's.
"I shouldn't be here," she said. "Nonsense. I want you here, and your daughter wants you here. But that's all. Your husband is going to have to see you. We'll make him recognize you. Ha! Won't it be fun to see his face? You'll go to his house, and when his second wife answers the door, you say, 'I want to speak to my husband,' and you name his personal name. Tell him I'll be sitting in the family room. Walk past her as if she were a servant. She'll scold him when he comes home from work, and it'll serve him right. You yell at him, too." "I'm scared," said Moon Orchid.
"I want to go back to Hong Kong."
"You can't. It's too late. You've sold your apartment. See here? We know his address. He's living in Los Angeles with his second wife, and they have 3 children.
Claim your rights.
Those are your children. He's got 2 sons.
You have 2 sons. You take them away from her. You become their mother."
"Do you really think I can be a mother of sons? Don't you think they'll be loyal to her, since she gave birth to them?"
"The children will go to their true mother. You," said Brave Orchid. "That's the way it is with mothers and children."
"Do you think he'll get angry at me?
because I came without telling him.
He deserves your getting angry with him. For abandoning you, and for abandoning your daughter.
He didn't abandon me. He's given me so much money. I've had all the food and clothes and servants I've ever wanted. And he supported our daughter, too, even though she's only a girl. He sent her to college. I can't bother him. I mustn't bother him.
How can you let him get away with this?
Bother him. He deserves to be bothered. How dare he marry somebody else when he has you? How can you sit there so calmly? He would have let you stay in China forever. I had to send for your daughter, and I had to send for you.
Urge her.
She turned to her niece. Urge her to go look for him.
I think you should go look for my father, she said. I'd like to meet him. I'd like to see what my father looks like.
What does it matter what he's like, said her mother. You're a grown woman, with a husband and children of your own. You don't need a father or a mother either. You're only curious.
In this country, said Brave Orchid, many people make their daughters their heirs. If you don't go see him, he'll give everything to the second wife's children.
But he gives us everything anyway. What more do I have to ask for? If I see him face to face, what is there to say?
I can think of hundreds of things, said Brave Orchid. Oh, how I'd love to be in your place. I could tell him so many things. What scenes I could make. You're so wishy-washy.
Yes, I am.
You have to ask him why he didn't come home. Why he turned into a barbarian. Make him feel bad about leaving his mother and father. Scare him. Walk right into his house with your suitcases and boxes. Move right into the bedroom. Throw her stuff out of the drawers and put yours in. Say, I am the first wife, and she is our servant.
Oh, no, I can't do that. I can't do that at all. That's terrible.
Of course you can. I'll teach you.
I am the first wife, and she is our servant.
And you teach the little boys to call you mother.
I don't think I'd be very good with little boys. Little American boys. Our brother is the only boy I've known.
Aren't they very rough and unfeeling?
Yes, but they're yours. Another thing I'd do, if I were you, I'd get a job and help him out. Show him I could make his life easier. How I didn't need his money.
He has a great deal of money, doesn't he?
Yes, he can do some job the barbarians value greatly.
Could I find a job like that? I've never had a job.
You could be a maid in a hotel, Brave Orchid advised. A lot of immigrants start that way nowadays.
And the maids get to bring home all the leftover soap and the clothes people leave behind.
I would clean up after people then.
Brave Orchid looked at this delicate sister. She was such a little old lady. She had long fingers and thin, soft hands. And she had a high-class city accent from living in Hong Kong. Not a trace of village accent remained. She had been away from the village for that long. But Brave Orchid would not relent. Her dainty sister would just have to toughen up. Immigrants also work in the canneries, where it's so noisy it doesn't matter if they speak Chinese or not. The easiest way to find a job, though, is to work in Chinatown. You get 25 cents an hour, and all your meals if you're working in a restaurant. If she were in her sister's place, Brave Orchid would have been on the phone immediately, demanding one of those Chinatown jobs. She would make the boss agree that she start work as soon as he opened his doors the next morning. Immigrants nowadays were bandits, beating up store owners and stealing from them rather than working. It must have been the communists who taught them those habits. Moon Orchid rubbed her forehead. The kitchen light shined warmly on the gold and jade rings that gave her hands a completeness. One of the rings was a wedding ring. Brave Orchid, who had been married for almost 50 years, did not wear any rings. They got in the way of all the work. She did not want the gold to wash away in the dishwater, and the laundry water, and the field water. She looked at her younger sister, whose very wrinkles were fine. "Forget about a job," she said, which was very lenient of her. "You won't have to work. You just go to your husband's house and demand your rights as first wife. When you see him, you can say, 'Do you remember me?'"
"What if he doesn't?"
Then start telling him details about your life together in China. Act like a fortune teller. He'll be so impressed. Do you think he'll be glad to see me?
He better be glad to see you.
As midnight came, 22 hours after she left Hong Kong, Moon Orchid began to tell her sister that she really was going to face her husband.
He won't like me, she said.
Maybe you should dye your hair black so he won't think you're old. Or I have a wig you can borrow.
On the other hand, he should see how you've suffered.
Yes, let him see how he's made your hair turn white.
These many hours, her daughter held Moon Orchid's hand. The two of them had been separated for 5 years. Brave Orchid had mailed the daughter's young photograph to a rich and angry man with citizenship papers. He was a tyrant. Mother and daughter were sorry for one another.
Oh, let's not talk about this anymore, said Moon Orchid. We can plan tomorrow. I want to hear about my grandchildren. Tell me about them. I have 3 grandchildren, don't I? She asked her daughter.
Brave Orchid thought that her niece was like her mother, the lovely, useless type. She had spent so much time trying to toughen up these two.
The children are very smart, Mother, her niece was saying. The teachers say they are brilliant. They can speak Chinese and English. They'll be able to talk to you.
My children can talk to you, too, said Brave Orchid. Come, talk to your aunt, she ordered. Her sons and daughters mumbled and disappeared. Into the bathroom, the basement, the various hiding places they had dug throughout the house. One of them locked herself in the pantry storeroom, where she had cleared off a shelf for a desk among the food. Brave Orchid's children were antisocial and secretive. Ever since they were babies, they had burrowed little nests for themselves in closets and underneath stairs. They made tents under tables and behind doors.
"My children are also very bright," she said. "Let me show you before you go to sleep."
She took her sister to the living room where she had a glass case, a large upside-down fish tank, and inside were her children's athletic trophies and scholarship trophies. There was even a beauty contest trophy. She had decorated them with runners about luck.
"Oh, my, isn't that wonderful," said the aunt. "You must be so proud of them. Your children must be so smart."
The children, who were in the living room, groaned and left. Brave Orchid did not understand why they were ashamed of the things they could do. It was hard to believe that they could do the things the trophy said they did. Maybe they had stolen them from the real winners. Maybe they had bought cups and medallions and pretended they've won them. She'd have to accuse them and see how they reacted. Perhaps they fooled the ghost teachers and ghost coaches, who couldn't tell smart Chinese from dumb Chinese. Her children certainly didn't seem like much. She made some of the children sleep on the floor and put Moon Orchid and her daughter in their room.
"Will my mother be living at your house or my house?" her niece asked Brave Orchid.
"She's going to live with her own husband," Brave Orchid was firm. She would not forget about this subject in the morning.
The next day, immediately after breakfast, Brave Orchid talked about driving to Los Angeles. They would not take the coast route along mountainsides that dropped into the sea, the way her children, who liked carnival rides, would want to go. She would make them take the inland route, flat and direct.
"The first thing you've got to ask your husband," she said, "is why he never came back to China when he got rich."
"All right," said Moon Orchid.
She was poking about the house, holding cans up to her ear, trailing after the children.
"He probably has a car," Brave Orchid persisted. "He can drive you places. Should he tell you to go away, turn around at the door and say, 'May I come and watch your television now and then?' Oh, wouldn't that be pathetic?
But he won't kick you out. No, he won't.
You walk right into the bedroom and you open the second wife's closet. Take whatever clothes you like. That will give you an American wardrobe."
"Oh, I can't do that."
"You can. You can. Take first sister-in-law as your example."
Their only brother had had a first wife in the village, but he took a second wife in Singapore where he had gone to make his gold. Big wife suffered during the revolution.
"The communists will kill me," she wrote to her husband, "and you're having fun in Singapore." Little Wife felt so sorry for her. She reminded her husband that he owed it to Big Wife to get her out of China before it was too late. Little Wife saved the passage fare and did the paperwork. But when Big Wife came, she chased Little Wife out of the house. There was nothing for their husband to do but build a second house, one for each wife and the children of each wife. They did get together, however, for yearly family portraits. Their sons' first and second wives were also in the pictures, first wives next to the husbands and second wives standing among the children. "Copy our sister-in-law," Brave Orchid instructed. "Make life unbearable for the second wife, and she'll leave. He'll have to build her a second house."
"Oh, I wouldn't mind if she stays," said Moon Orchid. "She can comb my hair and keep house. She can wash the dishes and serve our meals, and she can take care of the little boys," Moon Orchid laughed.
Again, it occurred to Brave Orchid that her sister wasn't very bright, and she had not gotten any smarter in the last 30 years.
"You must make it plain to your husband right at the start what you expect of him. That is what a wife is for, to scold her husband into becoming a good man. Tell him there will be no third wife. Tell him you may go visiting any time you please. And I, the big sister, may visit your house for as long as I please. Let him know exactly how much money you expect for allowance."
"Should I ask for more or less money now that I'm here?"
"More, of course. Food costs more here. Tell him that your daughter, who is the oldest, must inherit his property. You have to establish these things at the start. Don't begin meek."
Sometimes Moon Orchid seemed to listen too readily, as if her sister were only talking story.
"Have you seen him in all these years?" she asked Brave Orchid.
"No. The last time I saw him was in China, with you. What a terrible, ugly man he must be not to send for you."
"I'll bet he's hoping you'd be satisfied with his money. How evil he is. You'd have to live like a widow for 30 years. You're lucky he didn't have his second wife write you telling you he's dead."
"Oh, no, he wouldn't do that."
"Of course not. He would be afraid of cursing himself."
"But if he is so ugly and mean, maybe I shouldn't bother with him."
"I remember him," said her daughter. "He wrote me a nice letter."
"You can't remember him," said her mother. "You were an infant when he left. He never writes letters. He only sends money orders."
Moon Orchid hoped that the summer would wear away while her sister talked, that Brave Orchid would then find autumn too cold for travel. Brave Orchid did not enjoy traveling. She found it so nauseating that she was still recovering from the trip to San Francisco. Many of the children were home for the summer, and Moon Orchid tried to figure out which one was which. Brave Orchid had written about them in her letters, and Moon Orchid tried to match them up with the descriptions. There was indeed an oldest girl who was absent-minded and messy. She had an American name that sounded like ink in Chinese.
"Ink!" Moon Orchid called out. Sure enough, a girl smeared with ink said, "Yes."
Then Brave Orchid worried over a daughter who had the mark of an unlucky woman. Yes, there was certainly a girl with an upper lip as curled as Bridget Bardot's. Moon Orchid rubbed this niece's hands and cold feet. There was a boy, Brave Orchid said, was thick-headed. She had written that when he crawled as a baby, his head was so heavy he kept dropping it on the floor. Moon Orchid did indeed see a boy whose head was big, his curls enlarging it, his eyebrows thick and slanted like an opera warrior's. Moon Orchid could not tell whether he was any less quick than the others. None of them were articulate or friendly. Brave Orchid had written about a boy whose oddity it was to stick pencil stubs in his ears. Moon Orchid sneaked up on the boys and lifted their hair to look for pencil stubs. "He hangs upside down from the furniture like a bat," his mother wrote, "and he doesn't obey." Moon Orchid didn't find a boy who looked like a bat and no stubs, so decided that the boy must be the one in Vietnam. And the nephew with the round face and round eyes was the inaccessible cliff. She immediately recognized the youngest girl, the raging billows.
"Stop following me around," she shouted at her aunt. "Quit hanging over my neck."
What are you doing? Moon Orchid would ask. What are you reading?
Nothing, this girl would yell.
You're breathing on me. Don't breathe on me.
It took Moon Orchid several weeks to figure out just how many children there were because some only visited and did not live at home. Some seemed to be married and had children of their own. The babies that spoke no Chinese at all, she decided, were the grandchildren. None of Brave Orchid's children was happy, like the two real Chinese babies who died. Maybe what was wrong was that they had no oldest son and no oldest daughter to guide them.
I don't see how any of them could support themselves, Brave Orchid said. I don't see how anybody could want to marry them.
Yet Moon Orchid noticed some of them seemed to have a husband or a wife who found them bearable.
They'll never learn how to work, Brave Orchid complained.
Maybe they're still playing, said Moon Orchid, although they didn't act playful.
Say good morning to your aunt, Brave Orchid would order, although some of them were adults. Say good morning to your aunt, she commanded every morning.
Good morning, aunt, they said, turning to face her, staring directly into her face.
Even the girls stared at her like cat-headed birds. Moon Orchid jumped and squirmed when they did that. They looked directly into her eyes as if they were looking for lies, rude, accusing. They never lowered their gaze. They hardly blinked.
Why didn't you teach your girls to be demure? She ventured.
Demure? Brave Orchid yelled. They are demure. They're so demure they barely talk. It was true that the children made no conversation. Moon Orchid would try to draw them out.
They must have many interesting savage things to say, raised as they'd been in the wilderness. They made rough movements, and their accents were not American exactly, but peasant like their mothers, as if they had come from a village deep inside China. She never saw the girls wear the gown she had given them. The young raging one growled in her sleep.
Leave me alone.
Sometimes, when the girls were reading or watching television, she crept up behind them with a comb and tried to smooth their hair. But they shook their heads, and they turned and fixed her with those eyes. She wondered what they thought and what they saw when they looked at her like that. She liked coming upon them from the back to avoid being looked at. They were like animals, the way they stared. She hovered over a child who was reading, and she pointed at certain words.
What's that?
She tapped at a section that somebody had underlined or annotated. If the child was being patient, he said, That's an important part.
Why is it important?
Because it tells the main idea here.
What's the main idea?
I don't know the Chinese words for it.
They're so clever, Moon Orchid would exclaim. They're so smart. Isn't it wonderful they know things that can't be said in Chinese?
Thank you, the child said. When she complimented them, they agreed with her. Not once did she hear a child deny a compliment.
She's pretty, she said.
Thank you, aunt, they answered.
How vain.
She marveled at their vanity.
You play the radio beautifully, she teased,
and sure enough, they gave one another puzzled looks. She tried all kinds of compliments, and they never said,
Oh, no, you're too kind. I can't play it at all. I'm stupid. I'm ugly.
They were capable children. They could do servant's work, but they were not modest.
What time is it?
She asked, testing what kinds of minds they had, raised away from civilization. She discovered they could tell time very well, and they knew the Chinese word for thermometer and library. She saw them eat undercooked meat, and they smelled like cow's milk. At first she thought they were so clumsy they spilled it on their clothes, but soon she decided they themselves smelled of milk. They were big and smelled of milk. They were young and had white hair. When Brave Orchid screamed at them to dress better, Moon Orchid defended them, sweet, wild animals that they were.
But they enjoyed looking like furry animals. That's it, isn't it? You enjoy looking like wild animals, don't you? "I don't look like a wild animal," the child would yell like its mother.
"Like an Indian then, right?"
"No!"
Moon orchids stroked their poor white hair. She tugged at their sleeves and poked their shoulders and stomachs. It was as if she was seeing how much it took to provoke a savage.
"Stop poking me!" they would roar, except for the girl with the cold hands and feet.
"Hmm," she mused. "Now the child is saying, stop poking me."
Brave Orchid put her sister to work cleaning and sewing and cooking. Moon Orchid was eager to work, roughing it in the wilderness. But Brave Orchid scolded her.
"Can't you go any faster than that?"
It infuriated Brave Orchid that her sister held up each dish between thumb and forefinger, squirted detergent on the back and front, and ran water without plugging up the drain. Moon Orchid only laughed when Brave Orchid scolded.
"Oh, stop that with the dishes. Here, take this dress and hem it."
But Moon Orchid immediately got the thread tangled and laughed about that. In the mornings, Brave Orchid and her husband arose at 6 a.m. He drank a cup of coffee and walked downtown to open up the laundry. Brave Orchid made breakfast for the children who would take the first laundry shift. The ones going to summer school would take the afternoon and night shifts. She put her husband's breakfast into the food container that she had bought in Chinatown, one dish in each tier of the stack. Some mornings, Brave Orchid brought the food to the laundry. Another day, she sent it with one of the children. But the children let the soup slosh out when they rode over bumps on their bikes. They dangled the tiers from one handlebar and the rice kettle from the other. They were too lazy to walk. Now that her sister and niece were visiting, Brave Orchid went to the laundry later.
"Be sure you heat everything up before serving it to your father," she yelled after her son. "And make him coffee after breakfast and wash the dishes."
He would eat with his father and start work. She walked her sister and niece to the laundry by way of Chinatown. Brave Orchid pointed out the red, green, and gold Chinese school. From the street, they could hear children's voices singing the lesson, "I am a person of the Middle Nation." In front of one of the benevolent associations, a literate man was chanting the Gold Mountain News, which was taped to the window. The listening crowd looked at the pictures and said, "Aya."
"So this is the United States," Moon Orchid said. "It certainly looks different from China. I'm glad to see the Americans talk like us."
Brave Orchid was again startled at her sister's denseness. "These aren't the Americans. These are the overseas Chinese." By the time they got to the laundry, the boiler was screaming hot and the machines were ready.
"Don't touch or lean against my machine," Brave Orchid warned her sister. "Your skin would fry and peel off."
In the midst of the presses stood the sleeve machine, looking like twin silver spaceships. Brave Orchid's husband fitted the shirt sleeves over it with a karate chop between the shoulder blades.
"You mustn't back into that," said Brave Orchid.
"You should start off with an easy job," she said. But all the jobs seemed hard for Moon Orchid, who was wearing stockings and dress shoes and a suit.
The buttons on the presses seemed too complicated for her to push. And what if she caught her hands or her head inside a press? She was already playing with the water jets dancing on springs from the ceiling. She could fold towels, Brave Orchid decided, and handkerchiefs, but there would be no clean, dry clothes until afternoon. Already, the temperature was going up.
"Can you iron?" Brave Orchid asked.
Perhaps her sister could do the hand finishing on the shirts when they came off the machines. This was usually Brave Orchid's husband's job. He had such graceful fingers, so good for folding shirts to fit the cardboard patterns that he had cut from campaign posters and fight and wrestling posters. He finished the shirts with a blue band around each.
"Oh, I'd love to try that," Moon Orchid said.
Brave Orchid gave her sister her husband's shirts to practice on. She showed her how family clothes were marked with the ideograph middle, which is a box with a line through its center. Moon Orchid tugged at the first shirt for half an hour and folded it crooked, the buttonholes not lined up with the buttons at all. When a customer came in, her ironing table next to the little stand with the tickets, she did not say hello, but giggled, leaving the iron on the shirt until it turned yellow and had to be whitened with peroxide. Then she said it was so hot she couldn't breathe. "Go take a walk," Brave Orchid said, exasperated. Even the children could work. Both girls and boys could sew. "Free mending and buttons," said the lettering on the window. The children could work all of the machines, even when they were little and had to stand on apple crates to reach them. "Oh, I can't go out into Gold Mountain myself," Moon Orchid said. "Walk back toward Chinatown," suggested Brave Orchid. "Oh, come with me, please," Moon Orchid said. "I have to work," said her sister. Brave Orchid placed an apple crate on the sidewalk in front of the laundry. "You sit out here in the cool air until I have a little time." She hooked a steel pole to the screw that unrolled the awning. "Just keep turning until the shadow covers the crate." It took Moon Orchid another half hour to do this. She rested after every turn and left the pole hanging. At noon, when the temperature inside reached 111 degrees, Brave Orchid went out to the sidewalk and said, "Let's eat." She had heated the leftovers from breakfast on the little stove at the back of the laundry. In back, there was also a bedroom for the nights when they finished packaging, too tired to walk home. Then five or six people would crowd into the bed together. Some slept on the ironing boards, and the small children slept on the shelves. The shades would be pulled over the display windows and the door. The laundry would become a cozy new home, almost safe from the night footsteps, the traffic, the city outside. The boiler would rest, and no ghost would know there were Chinese asleep in their laundry. When the children were sick and had to stay home from school, they slept in that bedroom so that Brave Orchid could doctor them. The children said that the boiler, jumping up and down, bursting steam, flames shooting out the bottom, matched their dreams when they had a fever. After lunch, Brave Orchid asked her husband if he and the children could handle the laundry by themselves. She wanted to take Moon Orchid out for some fun. He said that the load was unusually light today. The sisters walked back to Chinatown. "We're going to get some more to eat," said Brave Orchid. Moon Orchid accompanied her to a gray building with a large storefront room, overhead fans turning coolly and cement floor cool underfoot. Women at round tables were eating black seaweed gelatin and talking. They poured caro syrup on top of the black quivering mass. Brave Orchid seated Moon Orchid and dramatically introduced her. "This is my sister who has come to Gold Mountain to reclaim her husband." Many of the women were fellow villagers. Others might as well have been villagers, together so long in California. "Marvelous! You could blackmail him," the women advised. "Have him arrested if he doesn't take you back." "Disguise yourself as a mysterious lady and find out how bad he is. Oh, you've got to do some husband beating. That's what you've got to do." They were joking about her. Moon Orchid smiled and tried to think of a joke, too. The large proprietress in a butcher's apron came out of the kitchen, lugging tubs full of more black gelatin. Standing over the tables and smoking a cigarette, she watched her customers eat. It was so cool here, black and light yellow and brown, and the gelatin was so cool. The door was open to the street. No passers-by but Chinese, though at the windows the Venetian blinds slid at the sunlight as if everyone were hiding. Between helpings, the women sat back, waving fans made out of silk, paper, sandalwood, and pandanus fronds. They were like rich women in China with nothing to do. "Game time," said the proprietress, clearing the tables. The women had only been taking a break from their gambling. They spread ringed hands and mixed the ivory tiles click-clack for the next hemp bird game. "It's time to go," said Brave Orchid, leading her sister outside. "When you come to America, it's a chance to forget some of the bad Chinese habits. A person could get up one day from the gambling table and find her life over." The gambling women were already caught up in their game, calling out goodbyes to the sisters. They walked past the vegetable, fish, and meat markets, not as abundant as in Canton, the carp not as red, the turtles not as old. And enter the cigar and seed shop. Brave Orchid filled her sister's thin hands with carrot candy, melon candy, and sheets of beef jerky. Business was carried out at one end of the shop, which was long and had benches against two walls. Rows of men sat smoking. Some of them stopped gurgling on their silver or bamboo water pipes to greet the sisters. Moon Orchid remembered many of them from the village. The cigar store owner, who looked like a camel, welcomed her. When Brave Orchid's children were young, they thought he was the old man of the north, Santa Claus. As they walked back to the laundry, Brave Orchid showed her sister where to buy the various groceries and how to avoid Skid Row. On days when you are not feeling safe, walk around it. But you can walk through it unharmed on your strong days. On weak days, you notice bodies on the sidewalk, and you are visible to panhandler ghosts and mugger ghosts. Brave Orchid and her husband and children worked hardest in the afternoon when the heat was the worst, all the machines hissing and thumping. Brave Orchid did teach her sister to fold the towels. She placed her at the table where the fan blew most, but finally, she sent one of the children to walk her home. From then on, Moon Orchid only visited the laundry late in the day when the towels came out of the dryers. Brave Orchid's husband had to cut a pattern from cardboard so Moon Orchid could fold handkerchiefs uniformly. He gave her a shirt cardboard to measure the towels. She never could work any faster than she did on the first day. The summer days passed while they talked about going to find Moon Orchid's husband. She felt she accomplished a great deal by folding towels. She spent the evening observing the children. She liked to figure them out. She described them aloud. Now they're studying again. They read so much. Is it because they have enormous quantities to learn, and they're trying not to be savages? He is picking up his pencil and tapping it on the desk. Then he opens his book to page 168. His eyes begin to read. His eyes go back and forth. They go from left to right, from left to right. This makes her laugh. How wondrous! Eyes reading back and forth. Now he's writing his thoughts down. What's that thought? She asked, pointing. She followed her nieces and nephews about. She bent over them. Now she is taking a machine off the shelf. She attaches two metal spiders to it. She plugs in the cord. She cracks an egg against the rim and pours the yolk and white out of the shell into the bowl. She presses a button and the spiders spin the eggs. What are you making? Aunt, please take your finger out of the batter. She says, Aunt, please take your finger out of the batter. Moon Orchid repeated as she turned to follow another niece walking through the kitchen. Now what's this one doing? Why, she's sewing a dress. She's going to try it on. Moon Orchid would walk right into the children's rooms while they were dressing. Now she must be looking over her costumes to see which one to wear. Moon Orchid pulled out a dress. This is nice, she suggested. Look at all the colors. No, Aunt, that's the kind of dress for a party. I'm going to school now. Oh, she's going to school now. She's choosing a plain blue dress. She's picking up her comb and brush and shoes, and she's going to lock herself up in the bathroom. They dress in the bathrooms here. She pressed her ear against the door. She's brushing her teeth. Now she's coming out of the bathroom. She's wearing the blue dress and a white sweater. She's combed her hair and washed her face. She looks in the refrigerator and is arranging things between slices of bread. She's putting an orange and cookies in a bag. Today she's taking her green book and her blue book and tablets and pencils. Do you take a dictionary? Moon Orchid asked. No, said the child, rolling her eyeballs up and exhaling loudly. We have dictionaries at school, she added before going out the door. They have dictionaries at school, said Moon Orchid, thinking this over. She knows dictionary. Moon Orchid stood at the window peeping. Now she's shutting the gate. She strides along like an Englishman. The child, married to a husband who did not speak Chinese, translated for him. Now she's saying that I'm taking a machine off the shelf and that I'm attaching two metal spiders to it. And she's saying the spiders are spinning with legs intertwined and beating the eggs electrically. Now she says I'm hunting for something in the refrigerator and, ha, I found it. I'm taking out butter, cow oil. They eat a lot of cow oil, she's saying.
She's driving me nuts,
the children told each other in English. At the laundry, Moon Orchid hovered so close that there was barely room between her and the hot presses. Now the index fingers of both hands press the buttons and, clump, the press comes down. But one finger on a button will release it. Sssst, the steam lets loose. Sssst, the water squirts. She described it so well, you would think she could do it. She wasn't as hard to take at the laundry as at home, though. She could not endure the heat, and after a while, she had to go out on the sidewalk and sit on her apple crate. When they were younger, the children used to sit out there, too, during their breaks. They played house and store and library, their orange and apple crates in a row. Passers-by and customers gave them money. But now they were older. They stayed inside or went for walks. They were ashamed of sitting on the sidewalk, people mistaking them for beggars. Dance for me, the ghosts would say before handing them a nickel. Sing a Chinese song. And before they got old enough to know better, they'd dance and they'd sing. Moon Orchid sat out there by herself. Whenever Brave Orchid thought of it, which was every day, she said, "Are you ready to go see your husband and claim what is yours?"
"Not today. But soon," Moon Orchid would reply.
But one day, in the middle of summer, Moon Orchid's daughter said, "I have to return to my family. I promised my husband and children I'd only be gone a few weeks. I should return this week." Moon Orchid's daughter lived in Los Angeles.
"Good," Brave Orchid exclaimed. "We'll all go to Los Angeles. You return to your husband, and your mother returns to hers. We only have to make one trip."
"You ought to leave the poor man alone," said Brave Orchid's husband. "Leave him out of women's business." "When your father lived in China," Brave Orchid told the children, "he refused to eat pastries because he didn't want to eat the dirt the women kneaded from between their fingers."
"But I'm happy here with you and all your children," Moon Orchid said. "I want to see how this girl's sewing turns out. I want to see your son come back from Vietnam. I want to see if this one gets good grades. There's so much to do."
"We're leaving on Friday," said Brave Orchid. "I'm going to escort you, and you will arrive safely." On Friday, Brave Orchid put on her dress-up clothes, which she wore only a few times during the year. Moon Orchid wore the same kind of clothes she wore every day and was dressed up. Brave Orchid told her oldest son he had to drive. He drove, and the two old ladies and the niece sat in the back seat. They set out at gray dawn, driving between the grape trees, which hunched like dwarfs in the fields. Gnomes in serrated outfits that blew in the morning wind came out of the earth, came up in rows and columns. Everybody was only half awake. "A long time ago," began Brave Orchid, "the emperors had four wives, one at each point of the compass, and they lived in four palaces. The Empress of the West would connive for power, but the Empress of the East was good and kind and full of light. You are the Empress of the East, and the Empress of the West has imprisoned the Earth's Emperor in the Western Palace. And you, the good Empress of the East, come out of the dawn to invade her land and free the Emperor. You must break the strong spell she has cast on him that has lost him the East." Brave Orchid gave her sister last-minute advice for 500 miles. All her possessions had been packed into the trunk. "Shall we go into your house together?" asked Brave Orchid. "Or do you want to go by yourself?"
"You've got to come with me. I don't know what I would say."
"I think it would be dramatic for you to go by yourself." He opens the door, and there you are, alive and standing on the porch with all your luggage.
Remember me, you say? Call him by his own name. He'll faint with shock. Maybe he'll say, no, go away. But you march right in, you push him aside and go in. Then you sit down in the most important chair and you take off your shoes because you belong. Don't you think he'll welcome me? Oh, she certainly wasn't very imaginative, thought Brave Orchid. It's against the law to have two wives in this country, said Moon Orchid. I read that in the newspaper. But it's probably against the law in Singapore, too. Yet our brother has two, and his sons have two each. The law doesn't matter. I'm scared. Oh, let's turn back. I don't want to see him. Suppose he throws me out. Oh, he will. He'll throw me out. And he'll have a right to throw me out, coming here, disturbing him, not waiting for him to invite me. Don't leave me by myself. You can talk louder than I can. Yes, coming with you would be exciting. I can charge through the door and say, where's your wife? And he'll answer, why, she's right here. And I'll say, this isn't your wife. Where is Moon Orchid? I've come to see her. I'm her first sister, and I've come to see that she is being well taken care of. Then I accuse him of murderous things. I'd have him arrested, and you pop up to his rescue. Or I can take a look at his wife, and I say, Moon Orchid, how young you've gotten. And he'll say, this isn't Moon Orchid, and you come in and say, no, I am. If nobody's home, we'll climb in a window. When they get back, we'll be at home, you the hostess and I your guest. You'll be serving me cookies and coffee. And when he comes in, I'll say, well, I see your husband is home. Thank you so much for the visit. And you say, come again any time. Don't make violence. Be routine. Sometimes Moon Orchid got into the mood. Oh, maybe I could be folding towels when he comes in. He'll think I'm so clever. I'll get to them before his wife does. But the further they came down the great central valley, green fields changing to fields of cotton on dry brown stalks, first a stray bush here and there, then thick, the more Moon Orchid wanted to turn back. No, I can't go through with this. She tapped her nephew on the shoulder. Please turn back. Oh, you must turn the car around. I should be returning to China. I shouldn't be here at all. Let's go back. Do you understand me? Don't go back, Brave Orchid ordered her son. Keep going. She can't back out now. What do you want me to do? Make up your minds, said the son, who was getting impatient. Keep going, said Brave Orchid. She's come this far, and we can't waste all this driving. Besides, we have to take your cousin back to her own house in Los Angeles. We have to drive to Los Angeles anyway. Can I go inside and meet my grandchildren? Yes, said her daughter. We'll see them after you straighten out things with your husband, said Brave Orchid. What if he hits me? I'll hit him. I'll protect you. I'll hit him back. The two of us will knock him down and make him listen. Brave Orchid chuckled as if she were looking forward to a fight. But when she saw how terrified Moon Orchid was, she said, it won't come to a fight. You mustn't start imagining things. We'll simply walk up to the door. If he answers, you'll say, I have decided to come live with you in the beautiful nation. If she answers the door, you'll say, you must be little wife. I am big wife. Why, you could even be generous. I'd like to see our husband, please, you say. I brought my wig, said Brave Orchid. Why don't you disguise yourself as a beautiful lady? I brought lipstick and powder, too. And at some dramatic point, you pull off the wig and say, I am Moon Orchid. That is a terrible thing to do. I'd be so scared. I am so scared. I want to be dropped off at my house first, said the niece. I told my family I'd be home to make lunch. All right, said Brave Orchid, who had tried to talk her niece into confronting her father 5 years ago, but all she had done was write him a letter telling him she was in Los Angeles. He could visit her, or she could visit him if he wanted to see her, she had suggested. But he had not wanted to see her. When the car stopped in front of her daughter's house, Moon Orchid asked, may I get out to meet my grandchildren? I told you no, said Brave Orchid. If you do that, you'll stay here, and it'll take us weeks to get up our courage again. Let's save your grandchildren as a reward. You take care of this other business, and you can play with your grandchildren without worry. Besides, you have some children to meet.
Grandchildren are more wonderful than children.
After they left the niece's suburb, the son drove them to the address his mother had given him, which turned out to be a skyscraper in downtown Los Angeles.
"Don't park in front," said his mother. "Find a side street. We've got to take him by surprise. We mustn't let him spot us ahead of time. We have to catch the first look on his face."
"Yes, I think I would like to see the look on his face."
Brave Orchid's son drove up and down the side streets until he found a parking space that could not be seen from the office building.
"You have to compose yourself," said Brave Orchid to her sister.
"You must be calm as you walk in."
"Oh, this is most dramatic, in broad daylight and in the middle of the city.
We'll sit here for a while and look at his building."
"Does he own that whole building?"
"I don't know. Maybe so."
"Oh, I can't move. My knees are shaking so much I won't be able to walk. He must have servants and workers in there, and they'll stare at me. I can't bear it."
Brave Orchid felt a tiredness drag her down. She had to baby everyone. The traffic was rushing. Los Angeles, noon hot, and she suddenly felt carsick. No trees, no birds, only city.
"It must be the long drive," she thought.
They had not eaten lunch, and the sitting had tired her out. Movement would strengthen her. She needed movement. "I want you to stay here with your aunt while I scout that building," she instructed her son. "When I come back, we'll work out a plan." She walked around the block. Indeed, she felt that her feet stepping on the earth, even when the earth was covered with concrete, gained strength from it. She breathed health from the air, though it was full of gasoline fumes. The bottom floor of the building housed several stores. She looked at the clothes and jewelry on display, picking out some for Moon Orchid to have when she came into her rightful place. Brave Orchid rushed along beside her reflection in the glass. She used to be young and fast. She was still fast and felt young. It was mirrors, not aches and pains, that turned a person old. Everywhere white hairs and wrinkles. Young people felt pain. The building was a fine one. The lobby was chrome and glass, with ashtray stands and plastic couches arranged in semicircles. She waited for the elevator to fill before she got in, not wanting to operate a new machine by herself. Once on the sixth floor, she searched alertly for the number in her address book. How clean his building was! The restrooms were locked, and there were square overhead lights. No windows, though. She did not like the quiet corridors with carpets but no windows. They felt like tunnels. He must be very wealthy. Good. It would serve a rich man right to be humbled. She found the door with his number on it. There was also American writing on the glass. Apparently, this was his business office. She hadn't thought about the possibility of catching him at his job. Good thing she had decided to scout. If they had arrived at his house, they would not have found him. Then they would have had to deal with her. And she would have phoned him, spoiled the surprise, and gotten him on her side. Brave Orchid knew how the little wives maneuvered. Her father had had two little wives. She entered the office, glad that it was a public place and she needn't knock. A room full of men and women looked up from their magazines. She could tell by their eagerness for change that this was a waiting room. Behind a sliding glass partition sat a young woman in a modern nurse's uniform, not a white one, but a light blue pantsuit with white trim. She sat before an elegant telephone with an electric typewriter. The wallpaper in her cubicle was like aluminum foil, a metallic background for a tall black frame around white paint with dashes of red. The wall of the waiting room was covered with burlap, and there were plants in wooden tubs. It was an expensive waiting room. Brave Orchid approved. The patients looked well-dressed, not sickly and poor.
"Hello, may I help you?" said the receptionist, parting the glass.
Brave Orchid hesitated. and the receptionist took this to mean that she could not speak English. "Just a moment," she said, and went into an inner room. She brought back another woman who wore a similar uniform except that it was pink, trimmed in white. This woman's hair was gathered up into a bun of curls at the back of her head. Some of the curls were fake. She wore round glasses and false eyelashes, which gave her an American look. "Have you an appointment?" she asked in poor Chinese. She spoke less like a Chinese than Brave Orchid's children. "My husband, the doctor, usually does not take drop-in patients," she said. "We're booked up for about a month." Brave Orchid stared at her pink-painted fingernails gesticulating and thought she probably would not have given out so much information if she weren't so clumsy with language. "I have the flu," Brave Orchid said. "Perhaps we can give you the name of another doctor," said this woman, who was her sister-in-law. "This doctor is a brain surgeon and doesn't work with flu." Actually, she said, "this doctor cuts brains." A child making up the words as she went along. She wore pink lipstick and had blue eyelids like the ghosts. Brave Orchid, who had been a surgeon too, thought that her brother-in-law must be a clever man. She herself could not practice openly in the United States because the training here was so different and because she could never learn English. He was smart enough to learn ghost ways. She would have to be clever to outwit him. She needed to retreat and plan some more. "Oh, well, I'll go to another doctor then," she said, and left. She needed a new plan to get her sister and brother-in-law together. This nurse wife was so young, and the office was so rich with wood, paintings, and fancy telephones that Brave Orchid knew it wasn't because he couldn't get the fare together that he hadn't sent for his old wife. He had abandoned her for this modern, heartless girl. Brave Orchid wondered if the girl knew that her husband had a Chinese wife. Perhaps she should ask her. But no, she mustn't spoil the surprise by giving any hints. She had to get away before he came out into the corridor, perhaps to go to one of the locked restrooms. As she walked back to her sister, she noted corners and passageways, broom closets, other offices, ambush spots. Her sister could crouch behind a drinking fountain and wait for him to get thirsty. Waylay him. "I met his second wife," she said, opening the car door. "What's she like?" asked Moon Orchid. "Is she pretty?" "She's very pretty and very young, just a girl. She's his nurse. He's a doctor like me. What a terrible, faithless man. You'll have to scold him for years, but first you need to sit up straight. Use my powder. Be as pretty as you can. Otherwise, you won't be able to compete." "You do have one advantage, however. Notice, he has her be his worker. She is like a servant, so you have room to be the wife. She works at the office, you work at the house. That's almost as good as having two houses. On the other hand, a man's real partner is the hardest worker. You couldn't learn nursing, could you? No, I guess not. It's almost as difficult as doing laundry." What a petty man he turned out to be, giving up responsibility for a pretty face. Brave Orchid reached for the door handle. "Are you ready?"
"For what?"
"To go up there, of course. We're at his office, and I think we ought to be very direct. There aren't any trees to hide you, no grass to soften your steps, so you walk right into his office. You make an announcement to the patients and the fancy nurses. You say, 'I am the doctor's wife. I'm going to see my husband.' Then you step to the inner door and enter. Don't knock on any doors. Don't listen if the minor wife talks to you. You walk past her without changing pace. When you see him, you say, 'Surprise!' You say, 'Who is that woman out there? She claims to be your wife.' That will give him a chance to deny her on the spot."
"Oh, I'm so scared. I can't move. I can't do that in front of all those people. Like a stage show. I won't be able to talk."
And sure enough, her voice was fading into a whisper. She was shivering and small in the corner of the seat. "So, a new plan then," said Brave Orchid, looking at her son, who had his forehead on the steering wheel. "You," she said,
I want you to go up to his office and tell your uncle that there has been an accident out in the street. A woman's leg has been broken and she's crying in pain. He'll have to come. You bring him to the car. Mother!
Hmm, mused Brave Orchid. Maybe we ought to put your aunt in the middle of the street and she can lie down with her leg bent under her.
But Moon Orchid kept shaking her head and trembling nose. Why don't you push her down in the intersection and pour ketchup on her? I'll run over her a little bit, said her son.
Stop being silly, she said. You Americans don't take life seriously.
Mother, this is ridiculous. This whole thing is ridiculous.
Go, do what I tell you, she said. I think your schemes will be useless, Mother.
What do you know about Chinese business, she said.
Do as I say.
Don't let him bring the nurse, said Moon Orchid.
Don't you want to see what she looks like? Asked Brave Orchid. Then you'll know what he's giving up for you.
No, no, she's none of my business. She's unimportant.
Speak in English, Brave Orchid told her son. Then he'll feel he has to come with you. She pushed her son out of the car.
I don't want to do this, he said.
You ruin your aunt's life if you don't.
You can't understand business begun in China. Just do what I say. Go!
Slamming the car door behind him, he left. Moon Orchid was groaning now and holding her stomach.
Straighten up, said Brave Orchid. He'll be here any moment.
But this only made Moon Orchid groan louder, and tears seeped out between her closed eyelids.
You want a husband, don't you? Said Brave Orchid.
If you don't claim him now, you'll never have a husband. Stop crying, she ordered.
Do you want him to see you with your eyes and nose swollen when that young so-called wife wears lipstick and nail polish like a movie star?
Moon Orchid managed to sit upright, but she seemed stiff and frozen.
You're just tired from the ride. Put some blood in your cheeks, Brave Orchid said and pinched her sister's withered face.
She held her sister's elbow and slapped the inside of her arm. If she had had time, she would have hit until the black and red dots broke out on the skin. That was the tiredness coming out. As she hit, she kept an eye on the rearview mirror. She saw her son come running, his uncle after him with a black bag in his hand.
Faster, faster, her son was saying.
He opened the car door.
Here she is, he said to his uncle. I'll see you later.
And he ran down the street. The two old ladies saw a man, authoritative in his dark western suit, start to fill the front of the car. He had black hair and no wrinkles. He looked and smelled like an American. Suddenly, the two women remembered that in China, families married young boys to older girls who babysat their husbands their whole lives. Either that, or in this ghost country, a man could somehow keep his youth.
Where's the accident? He said in Chinese.
What is this? You don't have a broken leg.
Neither woman spoke.
Brave Orchid held her words back. She would not let herself interfere with this meeting after long absence.
What is it? He asked. What's wrong?
These women had such awful faces.
What is it, grandmothers?
Grandmother? Brave Orchid shouted.
This is your wife! I am your sister-in-law.
Moon Orchid started to whimper. Her husband looked at her and recognized her.
You, he said. What are you doing here?
But all she did was open and shut her mouth without any words coming out.
Why are you here? He asked, eyes wide.
Moon Orchid covered her face with one hand and motioned no with the other.
Brave Orchid could not keep silent. Obviously, he was not glad to see his wife.
I sent for her, she burst out. I got her name on the Red Cross list, and I sent her the